broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Going places where the talk shows wish they could and they can't, brother. And tonight we have Ted Bell with us from Tens of Beverly Hills. Americans eating more. Americans packing on the pounds, and we're not doing the kind of physical labor that we should be doing that would help us keep that weight off. Only 6% of us, when we work, are actually doing any kind of a physical type of work that allows us to burn calories. We also have Jerry Noel with us, a writer who's going to talk about an online blog he's written called The Other Holocaust. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and this is Radio for Patriots by Patriots every single night. We ask you to join us here, and you can also watch us online at philhendryshow.com, which is, of course, the strong right arm, our internet arm. We also have Phil TV and HD right now on philhendryshow.com. So when you have a backstage pass, you can watch the show, you can listen to the show, you can hear the archives of the show, you can watch our news feed, you can go back and get archived video, you can get our classic podcast, you can get our regular podcast. I mean, it just doesn't end, man. The bargains, the value. The whole beautiful effervescent thing. So join us over there at philhendryshow.com. Tonight our affiliate spotlight is on KJCE in Austin, Texas, and WFBL in the great city of Syracuse, New York. So Jerry Noel has written a blog, and Jerry, I was going to say, you know, you've written a lot of blogs and a lot of books, and this is the first that I think you're really, the first time you've really jumped into the blogosphere, as they call it, huh?
That's right. Well, it's going to be an interesting experiment, I think, Phil, in finding out just what kind of discipline it takes to write online as opposed to doing the writing that I've done, which is traditional. And also in the newspaper world, you know, Phil, there's a time we had these deadlines, and deadlines are a little bit of a thing of the past. Newspapers do have to make a daily deadline, but so many of these articles we're writing today, we're writing them from everywhere. And we're not having to call them in. We're doing them online as simply sending it by way of email and things like that. So this is going to be fun. And this one was close to home because of kids getting older now, you know.
You've got two graduating, right?
I got my eldest two, Janice. And Janice is the eldest daughter, and Jerry Jr. is graduating actually next semester. He's going to be graduating in the autumn months. And then we've got two more coming up behind them, and of course we've got grandkids. But because of our eldest boy, David, and David's kids are going to be entering college here not too long.
All right, you call this the second Holocaust? Isn't that a little bit of a strong word? Because what we're going to talk to Jerry about here tonight is the disaster that has been happening to people here in the United States. With the weather, and it's a brutal thing. Have you been there?
I flew over and went with a couple of friends of mine who were in the National Guard in Missouri, and we saw some of the damage. I've never seen anything like it. I've been a newspaper reporter, and I've seen a lot of accidents, and I've seen a lot of weather damage, too, believe me. But I haven't seen anything quite this concentrated, and it's a very, very tough thing, Phil, to look at.
All right, so you've seen that disaster. You're writing a blog here about what you consider to be the second disaster in America, which is the graduating seniors, people leaving college, and they haven't learned anything.
Yeah, and this is a problem. Well, you may love your kids as I love my kids, and you may honor the worship the very ground they walk on. You know, I mean, when my eldest was born, Janice was she was the first of three, and we had such great hopes for her. We still do, but she has spent 4 years in college, and she's going to be leaving college without having learned a whole lot. She's going to have a bachelor's degree, and she's going to have some grasp of the. Her major was in theater arts, and the second one coming up, Jerry Jr., his major is in business administration. A lot of people have business administration.
Well, what do you call this second Holocaust?
We've got kids, literally thousands of them being graduating this year, Phil, who are going out in the workplace, and they are not ready. They're not intelligent enough to grapple what's going to be happening in the world. They're not smart enough to get the jobs that are going to be available to them. They are not motivated enough.
Are they basically intelligent enough?
I don't know if they're intelligent enough. I had the greatest of hopes for my kids, and I'm sure there are millions of people in America tonight who have the greatest of hopes for their kids and would say, well, I've got very intelligent kids. It just seems to be a very tough workplace. I think there is another way of looking at this. We have another disaster that we have to look at. It's not just the disasters that we see when a hurricane hits or when the tornadoes hit or when the earthquakes occur and the tsunamis and so forth, of which we've seen so many. The other disaster we've got is the drain of intelligence from the American business model and manufacturing model, and I think that has to do with the people that are coming out of college.
Are the kids that are coming out of college, in other words, are they lazy? Are they not intelligent enough?
I think it's a combination of both. I think you've got a lot of people graduating from college these days who are not motivated. A lot of them are not motivated because they felt that at some point in their careers in college, they felt that they could perhaps make money playing video games, or they thought they could make money watching television, or they thought they could make money staying in the dorm room. But you figure out you can't do that, and then you have to then apply yourself, and you apply yourself in the wrong area. So we have thousands and thousands of kids coming out of college who are essentially. If you talk about the numbers of people, Phil, that die every year in weather-related, these are people that are dead as well. They are dead. They're dead to us in terms of their availability to us as a society.
All right, I want to be very clear. We have Jerry Noel on the phone with us, a writer who's written a book called, or excuse me, an online blog called "The Second Holocaust." You use the word Holocaust.
That's correct. Yes.
Because they're not dead, but you're saying they're dead to us, meaning there are thousands of, and millions perhaps, seniors leaving college, not high school.
No, these are our college seniors not going on to any kind of secondary education.
And they are, when you say they're dead to us, dead to the society?
Dead to the society and their usefulness. You can leave a college and have your bachelor's degree. You can get a business, a master's of business, and perhaps work your way into a company at a fairly comfortable account executive level. You might even get yourself a comptroller job or something, but you're never really going to add anything. You are eventually, within time, going to be seen as a lead weight in the company. Now,
but we have successful people all the time in businesses across this country. We have people that are proving themselves all the time.
Well, we have people that are proving themselves to these companies, but where do we have the truly great minds, the Thomas Edisons? Where are they? Where are the Rockefellers? Where are the minds like Bill Gates? Where are the minds like, if you want to go into the entertainment, the Walt Disneys? Where are the minds that, where are the innovative and creative and explosively genius-driven minds? We don't have them. And we don't see any on the horizon. And that's why we say that we have thousands, if not millions, as you said, Phil, of seniors leaving colleges who are dead. Dead, essentially, in every way, except physically, to us. And my son, and I love him, and I love my daughter, and I think we all love our kids, and I'm always going to be there for them. But they're dead to me, and they're dead to...
They're dead to you in what way? What do you mean dead?
Well, the idea that my son and my daughter are going to graduate with anything approaching a useful skill that society is going to be able to mine and develop for great things is highly unlikely. And it's just as true for anyone listening right now. I'm not trying to say because my kids are dead to me that people listening right now, their kids need to be dead to them, but we're all in the same boat.
And look, I've got a stepdaughter who I just had breakfast with the other morning. I've got two sons. Everyone, with the exception of my girl, these guys are graduated from college. They've all started their careers. One of them works for me, who is a very, very bright guy and has got so much potential, and we use him for so many things. I see in him enormous potential to run a business someday. Is that not good enough?
Well, it depends on the business. You know, if you're talking about a mom-and-pop operation, I don't know what kind of business. I'm not talking about yours necessarily, Phil, but if you're talking about a mom-and-pop operation where you don't need the kind of genius thinking that's going to drive a Thomas Edison industry. Again, think about Thomas Edison. Do we have any Thomas Edison? We don't have that. And we don't have that this generation, probably won't have next generation. We've got millions and millions of young people leaving colleges. We're waiting for that great genius mind. That's not going to happen. And the mind, the killing of the mind, the killing of the American mind is taking place with these just dead, from the neck up, if you want to call them, young people.
Well, that's not a very optimistic. What is your solution to this? It's not a very optimistic. And by the way, we're talking with Jerry Knoll here on the Phil Hendry Show, a writer who's written a book called The Second Holocaust, which is a very powerful. It might even be an overkill term, Jerry, that we have not only people that have lost their lives in natural disasters, we have people who are brain dead. You're basically saying.
The disaster is that, and I might. You're probably right. I probably shouldn't have used the word Holocaust because it brings up too many other images. I should have said disaster, but what I'm saying is the people are alive and vibrant as far as it goes. And if you need somebody to rent a jet ski, well, you've got people who can, rent jet skis. But these are not individuals that are going to actually do anything for this country, the society that we live in right now. Your kids, my kids. I remember again, Phil, I'm including my own kids. It's Jerry Jr. and Janice is my eldest, is going to be graduating here in a few weeks. She's got a degree in theater arts. She won't be able to use it. She can't, and she knows it. She's coming home to live. And
does this have more to do with the fact that she's coming home to live with you guys?
No, it doesn't at all, because we understand the economy. It's got nothing to do with the economy. It's that she's not bringing anything into the workplace eventually. She won't be bringing into the workplace anything unique. Neither will Jerry. And neither are any of the other young people, the millions of them graduating. We need people. And I don't know where we're going to get them, but we need people who are going to excite commerce and industry, who are going to excite the development of new industries and new technologies, and new manufacturing. We just don't have it right now. We don't have it, and I don't see anybody who's got it. And you can talk to every 2,000, 3,000 college graduates in this country, and at the end of the day, you're tired, your eyes are tired, your ears are tired, you're bored. You're having talked to all 3,000, and there's nothing going on there. Just the eyes are a little glazed over, and you come up with these terms that I came up with the blog with, that they are dead. Dead to me, and dead to you, and dead inside, because they're looking back at you with almost like a doll's eyes, like these dead staring eyes, and that's the thing that we have to look at.
All right. Jerry Knoll with a sounding an alarm here in his blog called The Second Holocaust, that today's college graduates represent a wave of utter and complete inability, and that they are essentially, for society's purposes, dead. Our number is, it's a heck of an indictment, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. So to say that there are no Thomas Edisons, it means that they are dead.
Well, the idea here, Phil, is that college graduates are they're lazy and unintelligent. They're useless to society. They're dead to me, they're dead to you, and they are young people who are sons and daughters who are graduating from these colleges, who have no ability to, as I said, excite the technology and excite the infrastructure.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, talking to Jerry Knoll. Next hour we have Ted Bell here as we go through this Thursday night on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here from the El Pacifico. 877-876-PHIL. Check us out on philhendryshow.com. We got our Phil TV in HD cranking right now. We had a little bit of pre-show maintenance. We are up and running and beautiful, and we'll be right back.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And we have Jerry Knoll with us here on the Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL is our number. And Jerry has written The Second Holocaust, a blog about America's chances here over the next 20 years, that we have college graduates this generation of college graduates who really don't have anything going on. I mean, that is essentially what you're saying here, right?
Well, I'm saying that, not in comparison, for instance, Phil, you have to put everything in comparison.
Yeah. Well, in your blog, you're talking about the Chinese.
Well, without question, the Chinese have us, right now, the Chinese have got us dead to rights, manufacturing, the production, just the productivity alone. And of course, the Chinese have got a far more effective, I think, manufacturing base because it is so enforced, and it does not go, it's not, certainly it's not run along the same lines as American production, private business, small interest, and so forth. That's one problem. And the other problem you have is just the American mentality of requiring a certain level of money, and if we, you know, don't get that kind of money, then we're not very motivated people, and right now we're going through this cross-pollinization between, being competitive with a country that, like China, which is paying much, much less, and at the same time trying to keep the viability of our unions and our workforce in place. That's not going to happen. You know, we have people that are dead, and when I say dead, I mean in terms of their ability to produce compared to, like, the Chinese, the Brazilians, the Russians, dead. Here's the other thing. This is something that was created by the American parent because they sort of took upon themselves luxuries and I'm trying to think of the profitability of the generation that came before. So we don't have any answers. We don't have any answers. Where are they going to come from, the Edisons? We don't know. The parents of these kids don't know.
Well, I mean, we've always believed in this country that it takes good old-fashioned Yankee ingenuity, using the imagination.
Well, there's nothing to stimulate the imagination in a country where the very first thing that comes to mind, if you want to be stimulated about anything, is money. All right. I can guarantee you, of the people that you will have calling your radio show tonight, that the people that call up will have more to say about insignificant and petty things than they do about the overall manufacturing ability of this country.
What do you mean by that? Well, I'll tell you what, before you even, you know, answer that, why don't we take a phone call, okay?
But I'm not trying to put anybody down, you know.
Well, I mean, what you're saying is that the American people don't get the big picture.
I don't. The American people don't get the big picture because the American people have not been, have not been compelled to pay attention to the big picture.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Today's college graduate is mentally dead, according to our guest here, Jerry Noel, and cannot compete with the Chinese and others. Dave in Indianapolis, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, I've been listening, and it's driving me crazy hearing your guest who's written a blog. I know he hasn't written a book, but he's written a blog about all college students who are dead coming out of college and not able to contribute. I do understand perhaps your two children are underachievers. It's very
nice. These are all college students. It's a whole generation. The whole generation is being affected here. I have to repeat what I'm saying, that you didn't hear me.
When I talk, Jerry, it's very possible that your two children are underachievers, and you're right to blame the parents. If I grew up in a home like yours,
I'm talking about
completely negative
about
the potential possibility. I think that I would have ended up.
What's wrong with this guy's? What's wrong with this guy's phone? It's he's feeding back. Have you got your radio turned down, sir?
The radio is off.
Okay, good. I'm getting feedback. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, okay. Sir, I was talking about everybody's kids, not just mine. Yours too.
Well, but you're escalating to everyone's kids.
Your kids are
not
mentally dead.
Okay.
Mentally dead.
But your children? Do you believe? Okay. What exactly are you offering to society? Listen a second, Jerry, please.
Someone has to the clarion call. Everybody in every generation has to be a clarion call to tell people, well, here is something that is a problem.
Okay,
and
that's what writers do.
That's what the job of a writer. That's what the job of a writer is, sir.
Okay, so you
that's
write.
The job of any journalist is.
What do you do?
And this is exactly
like
what I was saying to Mr. Henry. You are turning this into a petty thing about me.
Not at all.
I'm talking about a larger issue. That's exactly what I'm
asking
Mr.
you. I'm asking you yourself. What way are you like Thomas Edison or? In what way are you contributing to the way that Thomas said? You had one brilliant idea.
This is why we are losing, because you are turning this into a petty one-on-one thing, and this is why this country is losing. I'm saying this is a generational problem.
All right, let me move this along. Let me move this along. Forget about you, Dave, and you, Jerry. Have you guys got anything to offer in a general sense? I know what you're saying, Dave. You want to attack him personally, but that really doesn't answer the question. That doesn't answer the question as to what is wrong with, if there is anything wrong.
I'm telling you, this is generational.
All right, you say it's generational, but you really haven't offered any proof.
There is absolutely a problem in our country.
Yeah. Is this you there, sir? Okay. 877-876-PHIL.
Hello.
And, yeah, I don't know what happened to that guy's call, but we'll be back as we talk here with Jerry Noel and you on America and America's generational, the college graduates, basically, coming out of college right now are not very bright. In fact, they are dead from the neck up and cannot compete with the Chinese. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
Well, no.
876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. With me is Jerry Noel. He's a writer and has written a number of blogs on the state of the economy and American manufacturing. This most recent, The Second Holocaust, is about the not just the terrible natural disasters the American people and, frankly, people of the world have faced over the last several years. But the second natural disaster, as you call it, Jerry, the fact that we have kids going out of college, leaving college, and you keep calling them dead. Why?
Well, the idea, Phil, is to emphasize a point, and the point is that this is a generation of college graduates, potentials in the workforce and elsewhere, and these are people that are not alive as it pertains to the manufacturing, technological, and creative base that we need to compete with, again, the big C, which is China, and these other countries. But I'm glad you brought up China. I brought China up, and you and I were talking about China. China is the big, China is going to be, as they used to call, you know, cancer, the big casino. China is the new cancer. China is going to be the new disease that is going to eat away at the, at not only just American manufacturing, American domination in world economy, but also our confidence. And that's what's happening right now. We have lost our confidence. And with the loss of confidence, this is something that we sort of transfer onto our young people. So we have a lot of kids going to college, and we had an emphasis on people going to college. And gosh knows that we've done generations and generations of work in getting people to go to college, but we have never really told them what to do once they get there. Now, of course, it's important to know what you want to do with your life. And that goes without saying.
All right, well, you're talking about motivation here, right?
I'm talking about motivation. And raw intelligence. And something might have happened if you're talking about baby boomers. I don't know if this was something that had to do with the amount of drugs that was taken in the late 1960s and early 1970s with the blood of the parents of these kids who go into college and come out of college not much smarter than they were when they first got into high school, really. And to me, that's the larger issue here.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're talking here with Jerry Noel, and your thoughts, welcome, on our program. Is Jerry being a little hard? I mean, I know that the last gentleman we spoke to felt that you were being really hard on our college graduates, as well as, you know, maybe even the high schools, saying that the high school students saying that they are mentally dead and that China is producing better college students.
And the last gentleman you were referring to wanted, and I predicted it, and I was right. And I'm pretty on about these things. So I say, well, look, I'm presenting a problem that is so complex that the only thing that the American, the average American can grasp is to somehow get personal with it. So that gentleman started to attack me personally when he started to say, well, what are you doing? And I'm a writer. I mean, I could go out there right now and try and create a better climate.
Well, what were you saying about the man, that he was petty?
I was just saying he doesn't understand the problem. He doesn't understand the problem because his mind is so condensed because perhaps we're just Americans and all we know is being petty, that the only thing you know how to do is attack me. Well, you can't attack me. First of all, you're going to make a big mistake if you attack me because I can mop the floor with that. You know, I say it with the greatest of humility to him, but I'm going to mop the floor with anybody that's going to call and try to attack me. And that's not what it's about.
And what do you mean you're going to not mop the floor with them? We don't want to talk about, you know, we want to have a debate here. We want to learn.
Well, yes, exactly. So don't call up and tell me that I'm wrong. Call call up and ask me questions. Well, what do you think? How can we get out of this problem? But even that is something that kind of is monotonous, and I've gotten that on a lot of shows. So I would prefer people call up with their own solutions to the problem and their own ideas of how we get out from underneath and their own ideas of how we're going to. And I hope that their ideas that are not, you know, have to do with, you know, Jerry, you need to, you know, die. You know, I've had that.
Well, the shows that you've been on, you've gotten attacked personally because of what you're saying, I know. And what you're saying is very, very controversial. Now, I cannot, for my own self, say that I understand entirely the engine of economics. But I have to believe, because I do believe in American exceptionalism, I do believe that we are the world's descendants of the world's ADD people. And so I do believe that we have a better shot here in this country because of the wide berth we have in terms of personal freedom to compete. When people are coming out of college, you say, dead from the neck up, dead in comparison to the Chinese, dead in comparison to the Russians, dead in comparison to other generations, that's something that's fundamentally wrong. And the only thing you've been able to identify here is that their parents were drug takers.
Well, the parents were definitely drug users from the 60s and 70s. That's part of it. That's part of the problem. These were kids whose parents were... I'm not saying that was the lifestyle that they led, but there was something that had to do with the perhaps genetic makeup of a lot of these kids because of the drug use. The second thing that I think is the problem here is there simply isn't any motivation. The reason why there's no motivation is because the country has become an enormous space that people live in and do whatever they want to in and are not aware of the fact that they are related to anything larger. They just think that the rest of the world is sort of just play acting. So what I would like from anybody that calls your program tonight, and I know that you've been screening them out judiciously, and...
Well, we've had a lot of people calling and calling your names and hanging up, and...
Well, that's to be expected. But what I would like, rather than having, these people that I'm going to mop the floor with, I'd like to have people...
Well, first of all, here's the thing that please don't tell me how we're going to, you know, who we're going to choose to talk to you. I think you're intimidating a lot of people. And I think that the example is that gentleman that called. And I don't think, I don't want you to say, for instance, that this is a blanket statement that every college student that is out there is an idiot. And every college student...
Well, Phil, I'd like to not have to say that, but it's true. All right? Americans are not smart enough to come up with a solution. Americans are not smart enough to even produce a generation of college students that are going to be coming up with solutions. Americans are not smart enough to produce a generation of college students that may themselves produce a generation of college students that can come up with solutions. You know what I mean? So it's on and on and on and on. And until such time as we can create the humanity, Phil, that we need... And we don't have humanity in this country anymore. So we have dead people when it comes to tornadoes. We've got dead people when it comes to hurricanes. We have dead people when it comes to tsunamis. And we have dead people who are walking to classrooms every day and leaving those classrooms and going back to their dorm rooms dead. They're dead when they get up, dead when they go to bed, dead when they're sitting in class, dead when they go home to their parents, dead.
Well, you know what? There's a reason why people die, and some of it has to do with just the natural occurrence of life.
Well, that's absolutely true, and some of it has to do with the fact they have a fatal disease. The fatal disease we have in this country is we have lost our way. We have lost our way, and we certainly don't know how to make those Thomas Edisons any longer. We haven't had a Thomas Edison in this country since Bill Gates.
Well, Bill Gates ain't bad. I mean, every time we have a genius in this country, man, we come along with some...
Well, that's the other thing. We don't do it. They do it. So we have to begin to... Let's stop owning these guys like they're pet monkeys or that they're a pet or they're somebody that we have in our pocket. Because we don't own Bill Gates anymore. We own Thomas Edison. I don't think we should take credit for Thomas Edison.
See, when you come on here and you're talking to me, and we're talking to Jerry Noel, our number is 877-876-PHIL. When you come on here and you're talking to me about the genius of America and our ability to manufacture, you sound like you want to own all those geniuses.
I think, well, it's an instinct that we all want to own the genius, but the fact is Thomas Edison is not owned by America. Thomas Edison had to succeed despite America. Thomas Edison had to succeed despite the fact that he lived in America. He was called a retard. He's talking about the word retard. Thomas Edison was called that his whole life. So he made it in this country, even though America didn't want him to make it.
And how do you know that? How could you say something like that?
Well, look at the way he was treated when he was a kid. Look at the way that he was, that people called him a dumbass and a mental retard and this kind of thing. Well, the same thing could happen.
Well, no, hold on. When you say that America didn't want him to succeed, I think that America, the whole world is full of cruel people. You know,
the whole world is full of cruel people. So what's your point?
My point is the world is filled with cruel, but in America, you can bust through that cruelty and make it.
Boy, again, you have to understand the blog that I wrote called The Second Holocaust. Nobody's getting through that smokescreen anymore, Phil. Okay? And
well, you're not offering any solutions. You're just attacking America. That seems to be the point here. Okay?
The solutions I'm looking for are going to be solutions that will be slow in coming. But, I have to attack America because it's the cause. We don't have any Thomas Edisons or any more of the geniuses because America has decided to take them all and kill them and have them walking dead, like we were talking about last week with the zombies. And we've got a whole generation zombie.
A generation of zombies. 877-876 Phil. Jerry Noel on the line with us here as we talk about his blog, The Second Holocaust. And America's not producing any Thomas Edisons anymore, not producing any real geniuses. John Rockefellers, all of these guys, they're just not being made any longer because America's college graduates are dead. Dead mentally, dead emotionally, other than physically. They're walking to class, but they're dead. 877-876-PHIL, and we'll be back with more from Jerry Noel here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL.
No, they don't.
Phil.
Well, they don't understand.
That's 877-876-7445.
Well, I don't know, man.
877-876-7445.
If you say that people don't understand what you're talking about, it's your fault.
No, it isn't my fault. Let me explain, Phil.
All right, first of all, we have Jerry Noel on the line, a blogger, writer, a man who has been writing about the economy for some 31 years, and he's telling us that the generations that we see of college graduates, or at least individuals, people who will be graduating this year, are mentally dead, intellectually dead. Just, you said dead from the neck up, all of these terms. You even went so far at one point as to say the eyes are dead, doll's eyes, this kind of thing. Now, I don't know whether I don't think you've exactly explained why. You did say that the parents of these kids were former hippies and drug takers, and I don't think that that's an answer.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm not chalking up to that, Phil. There's a number of motivational factors. There's generational factors, genetic factors, motivational cultural factors, mostly what we're talking about here. But it is a generation of people who were born not so much into a country as they were born into a large amniotic sack of comfort, and there are answers as to what we need to do, but I don't know that anyone's going to understand them, because I understand when I come on your program tonight, I knew that what I was going to be doing, what I was going to be talking about, would be very, very difficult for people to understand. It's difficult for the American people to understand that they have a generation of young people coming out of college that are going to get, really, to use the parlance of the street, they're going to get it, quote, handed to them by the Chinese.
You're flat out saying that. You're just flat out saying there's an entire generation, thousands and thousands of American kids coming out of college, are going to get their asses handed to them by the Chinese, and that's it.
Well, there are solutions, certainly, and there are things we can do to turn it around. And
well, what? Tell me what those are.
For me to explain those, I would have to go into the homes of every one of your listeners and get them to put down their newspapers, put down their coffee, and put down their whatever they're doing. And I would have to get them to look at me and pay attention to me. What I've got to say takes an awful lot of concentration and intelligence, and I don't even know that people are going to understand it then.
And what are you talking about?
You asked me about a solution.
Yeah, a solution. In other words, if we have a generation of college students who are mentally dead, as you just said.
Correct.
What is the solution so that they can compete with the Chinese?
It is a very, very complex series of answers that I need to give you, and they are very, very specific to areas such as economics, specific to areas of manufacturing, areas of technology. There are also areas of motivation, areas of parenting, a lot of different areas here, Phil, and that I don't know where you want me to begin, but I can tell you this, it's going to be very, very hard to explain this, and that's why I lost hope when I first came on your program and you were asking me these questions, you sounded like one of these conservatives who, well, you know, America this, America that. Well, that's really fine. You know,
I don't know what you're saying to me right now. Are you telling me it's my fault that I didn't get that we're not getting answers? You have excuses. You have no solutions.
I have plenty of solutions. The question is, are you going to understand the solution? Am I going to be wasting my breath talking to you about a solution that you can't understand, your audience can't understand?
Well, what was it that I said when you first came on this program that you said it discouraged you?
When I first came on the program, you said, well, it's America and we can do anything we want. You gave me an awful lot of pat answers that I found to be wearying, fatiguing when I listened to you talking about that.
And what do you mean wearying and fatiguing?
I got tired listening to you talking about America, America, America. I love this country, Phil, believe me. I love it, but there's going to take a lot more than just loving America to turn it around. And so the solutions that I have, I spell out in three simple plans.
Well, is this a part of a book or something that you've written that you don't want to tell me what they are?
No, not at all. They are. I talk about them to all kinds of groups. I talk about them to all kinds of people that I'm invited, but I can't quite bring myself to tell you or your audience because I'm sensing that there is a dullness to what's going on in your audience and you.
And there's a dullness, huh? Well, I tell you something. That's quite an insult, first of all.
Well, you can tell me I've been insulted. I'm not trying to insult you. I'm trying to give you answers.
And all right, well, first of all, we've got college students that are dead from the neck up, and now we've got a dullness to our my radio show and my audience.
I don't want to paint you with a broad brush.
Well, that's exactly what you've done, and so I'm not going to get the answers, but you tell other groups what the answers are.
That is correct. Well, I'm not trying to tell you that I went on Rusty Humphrey's program.
All right, well, that's fine. You can go on anybody's show that you want to give answers. You don't want to give any answers to me, and you are using as the excuse the fact that we're too dumb.
I didn't say dumb.
Well, you said dull.
I said, yes, I did. I said dull. I don't think there is an acumen there that would understand.
So we're too dull to understand what it is you're trying to say. And to me, that's an insult. And not only that, but it makes me think to myself that you don't have...
Yeah, the way you're thinking to yourself.
And it makes me think that you don't have the answers. So with that, I guess we are concluding our conversation.
Well, we can conclude the conversation if you want, Phil. Or you can sit. I've got a couple of other ideas that I wanted to throw at you.
And if these are part of the answers that I'm looking for, then go ahead, yeah.
Well, the idea is that there isn't really an answer, that nothing that I'm going to give you that's going to open your eyes. I could give you answers, and you will still think that I'm giving you a lot of criticism. And I'm not. I could give you answers, and you would think that I'm talking about something entirely. So even if I gave you the answer, you wouldn't recognize the answer. That's what I mean about dull. That's what I mean about not being sharp. America is losing the battle with the rest of the world because, number one, we think we are. Every generation of Americans think they're losing the battle of manufacturing. This generation is no different. We think we are. Number two, we're losing the battle of manufacturing and technology with the rest of the world because we are actually losing it, because we don't have the ideas we used to have, because we used to manufacture more, and because we had a much broader base of product and stimulus and so forth. We don't have that anymore.
All right, so you're saying we're losing this battle because we think we are, and we're losing this battle because we actually are.
That is correct. The next thing that we're doing is that we are producing a duller and duller version of American from one generation to the next. So we start out when you have a great generation, the greatest generation, the next generation's a little bit more dull, and there is a dulling. And now we have ourselves here at the turn of the 21st century with just a dull.
Okay, and so the only solution to that is to make less dull people, and I don't know, I guess we're going to have to stop taking drugs. You haven't given me any answers here. I asked for some, and you decided that you didn't want to give any because we're too dull.
Yes, and I apologize for that, Phil. I should have known.
All right, Jerry, thank you very much. His blog, well, I'm not even going to tell him.
Tell him what?
Where to find your blog. I don't want to tell anybody about your blog. I don't want to tell anybody more about you. Get out of here.
He's going to be mad. We told him to talk about the blog.
Well, you know what? We're not going to talk about his blog now. If I'm too dull and too stupid to figure out what the hell is wrong with the American people. That's a beautiful thing, man. Jerry Noel. All right, coming up, we have Ted Bell from Tents of Beverly Hills. And before you even let him on the show, let him know that if I got to go through that again, man, Ted Bell is going to be talking with us about the less active at work Americans have packed on the pounds is an article that was actually in the Salt Lake Tribune, but one that has been reprinted across the country. So we're not really doing the work that we're not doing really active work. which I don't know whether that is something that we used to be, you know, used to be true or not. Only about, it says only the workforce is only about 6.5% of us are doing any kind of work that necessitates real physical activity. So with the fewer and fewer of us active at work, more and more of us are putting on the weight. And so we're going to talk to Ted Bell. He's the owner of Ted's of Beverly Hills, and our next hour is going to be sponsored by Ted. He'll come on here and talk with us about that. Also, our website, philhenryshow.com, is up and running, and we are at philhenryshow.com with Phil TV in HD right now, broadcasting live from the El Pacifico. Behind me, you see the beautiful Pacific Ocean here. From our studio, our merchandise store is open, and you can get the Phil Henry T-shirt, as well as our coffee mug, as well as our shot glass, all the legacy CDs that you want over there at philhenryshow.com. We also have a Twitter account that we just started tonight called PHS Ideas. And if you've got any ideas you want to pitch into the bin for the Phil Henry Show, by all means.
Yeah, we can really use it, too.
And it's you shut up, okay?
Shut up, man.
In any event, go over to PHS Ideas, twitter.com/PHS Ideas at Twitter. Get out of here.
Well,
we'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
World famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places other talk shows frankly wish they could, and they cannot. Our number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're online at philhenryshow.com. philhenryshow.com. And I don't know what word I was going for there.
You would have been a word that got an L in it.
The word I was going for didn't have an L in it. I was going for philhenryshow.com. Then I was going to say, what was I going to say? Oh, well, in any event, we have Phil TV in HD, and as well as our podcasts, which is a podcast of every show. The next day, you can hear it. You can sign up for that and pick it up through iTunes. And then we also have our archives, which go back... many years, man, well into the past century. So check it all out there at philhenryshow.com. Coming up this hour, Ted Bell is going to be joining us from Ted's of Beverly Hills in Beverly Hills.
Ted's Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
You got Mr. Bell. Ted?
Hey, everybody. Sorry, Bill. I'm just helping with some of the orders. Come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills tonight and every night. Great place to stop off and relax after work.
Here at
Caesar salad, it'll take your eyes out, I'll tell you that. Oh, we got a busy night tonight.
So you're helping with the serving, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I started in this business, Bill, in the 70s, and I was doing everything, and I still do it all, and we've got a very good night tonight. And I want to just say the Caesar salad is a beautiful thing tonight, and we have that dressing that you like.
You guys do a thing with the Caesar dressing that I love. You, and it'll probably gross people out, you know.
You love with the anchovies.
Yeah, but what you do with the anchovies is you throw them into a blender.
We do, yeah.
And you just blend all of that up in there, and it all comes out in the sea. Oh, God, it's fantastic, man. It's a great, great Caesar dressing. You got a busy night tonight. I know we're going to talk tonight about less active at work. Americans have packed on the pounds.
Well, I saw that article in the, you pointed it out to me there. I guess it was in one of the newspapers, the Salt Lake City paper. Was that it?
Yeah.
And I read this. Now, there is a review of the labor force since 1960. There's a sizable portion of national weight gain. There's a lot of people that are putting on weight, all right, by declining physical activity. There are jobs that are requiring moderate physical activity and so forth. But then I got to thinking, and I got on the phone with Bill Helleford and some of the other individuals that I'm in I'm in a kind of an informal chamber of commerce here in Beverly Hills, and it's among restaurateurs. And I said to them, if you saw this article that Henry gave me about the fact that there are people who are putting weight on, and we're in the middle of a recession. And that kind of perked up Hellerford, and it perked up a couple of people I was talking to. And I began to think about that. Now, did you get the messages that I left you?
I did not, no. When did you call?
Well, I called late in the afternoon. Maybe you didn't get them, but I called up because I found myself getting a little emotional. And the reason why I was getting emotional is because I recognized immediately that if people are putting on weight, it means people are eating more. And if people are eating more, you should see the resulting business with our restaurants and so forth. I have not seen that. I have not seen that. We're in the middle of a recession. I've seen my business off anywhere from, in some instances per month, sometimes 15%, sometimes 20%, and yet people are putting on more weight. Well, it says something. What it says is that the American people, even though we are a country trying to pull together during a very difficult time, we just saw our soldiers put their lives on the line. Their lives on the line to get this man, Osama bin Laden. We are seeing people in the Middle West and in the Deep South affected by these tornadoes. Terrible, terrible tornadoes. And yet, what are the rest of us doing? Well, the gentleman you had on last hour was talking about people being dead from the neck up. I don't know if that's true or not, but I will tell you this much. My business is off, as is the business of a lot of restaurateurs, and yet people are getting bigger and fatter and putting on weight. That means they're eating, and that means what they've decided is that I'm dead to them.
Well, is that really? What about people that are just eating at home because it is less expensive?
See, there is something that is a misnomer. Most of the, forgive me for saying this, but most of the garbage that people eat that puts the weight on is extremely expensive. It's not nutritional value. It's not that good. They're going to eat at home, but they're not eating quality food. When you come to my place, you eat quality. You either eat quality or you don't eat at all. I would rather have you not eat in my restaurant. I'd rather you leave my restaurant and go to another restaurant, or I'd rather just kick you out myself and not have you come anywhere near my restaurant ever again unless you can eat quality food in my restaurant. I'll throw you out.
What do you mean you'll throw me out? What does that mean?
If I cannot be assured of the fact that we are serving quality food, I'll tell you to get out. Get the hell out of my restaurant.
Why would you kick me out for something that you're not doing well?
It's not so much kicking you out. I'm just telling you, get the hell out of here because I won't serve you.
Well, that's pretty rude, isn't it? You know what I'm saying?
Well, if you want to look at it that way, but look at it this way. I'm saving you years of heartache by telling you I can't do it. I can't get it done. Ted Bell can't get it done. Get out.
Well, to me, I would take that personally.
Well, you shouldn't take it personally. What I'm basically saying is I am ashamed of myself. I'm ashamed of my restaurant. I can't bear to have anyone staring at it in the condition that it's in, that it cannot serve people a decent meal. I would much rather have you, all of you out there, get out. And that's just the way I do business. But that, fortunately, isn't what's going on.
All right, well, let's talk about reality here. I mean, that's a pretty drastic thing. I don't think I've ever heard of any restaurateur or anybody saying, you know what, the quality of my product is so bad, get out. I guess I'd have to admire that, you know.
Well, you're laughing, but I'm very serious about this. And, of course, the thing that I'm most serious about, how is it the American people are putting all of this weight on and they're not putting the weight on in restaurants? They're putting the weight on where? Where are they putting the weight on?
Well, at home.
Well, they may be putting the weight on at home, and that's all well and good, but they're not eating food at home that is going to do them any good. They're eating crackers and chips and jelly and this kind of thing. Why are they not, in other words, spreading the dollars into the restaurants of America, into the food service of America? Why are they not doing that? That is, you know, that film. Very big question for you.
Well, why should they?
What do you mean, why should they?
Why do people that are, the American people, are dealing with their own problems, okay?
Well, we're in a recession, Phil, and yet people are getting fatter. That tells me something. They got money. Okay? They've got money. Don't tell me.
Well, they've got money. They look, we all need to eat, right?
Need to eat? The American people are putting on weight. We're overweight. Overweight. Where is the number here? You gave me a number. I don't know by how much, but there is obesity. The root cause of the obesity epidemic is this doctor, Dr. Timothy S. Church, the exercise researcher at the Pennington Biomedical Research Center. We have an epidemic of obesity. So the American people are eating more, which means we couldn't possibly be in that much of a recession. If we were in a recession, one of the things we wouldn't do is we wouldn't be taking food out of our children's mouths and sticking it into our own. We might be...
Whoa, where are you getting that?
Well, it says here that adults are getting bigger. I don't see anything here where it says the kids are. I think what's happening is the adults, because of the nervousness of the recession and because of how nerve-wracking the whole thing is, the adults are nervous eating. It probably is going to affect the kids. They're not getting as much to eat. And they're not spreading the money around to the economy at large. For instance, the restaurants. Because if we are in a recession and yet people are getting fatter, something's going on. We have some money that we are spending, and we're spending it on things we don't really need. And so we're doing that, and we're putting it in our mouths. But we're not going out and spending it at a restaurant.
All right, well, your thinking is... maybe we're not in a recession.
Well, I think we are in a recession, but the extra money that people are saving, however they're saving it, what are they saving it for? To stick into their mouths. Now, you can do whatever you want, you can eat whatever you want, but I'm telling you, if you're saving extra money in the middle of a recession and you have just enough to shove it into your mouth so that you're putting on weight, why are you not eating at my restaurant, or why are you not going out and eating and instead sitting at home and hiding while you eat a box of chocolate-covered graham crackers, or you eat a box of See's candies, or you sit and you hide while you eat Hershey bars and stuff the wrappings into, to me, Phil. And
boy, you've got people doing some really weird stuff there, man. I mean, we're not exactly talking about binge eating. You know, we're talking about people who are overweight.
Overweight in the middle of a recession. American people are packing on the pounds in the middle of a economic recession.
You don't have any problem with them eating. What you have a problem with is where they're eating.
Absolutely, because I know that as long as people are staying at home and eating and they're putting that weight on, they're not eating healthy. They're eating crap. Excuse my language. The people would rather stay home and eat crap than come to my restaurant.
Why is that?
I think they perceive that it's going to be more expensive, and it isn't. I think it's going to cost the same amount of money in the long run, and you're going to get better food at my restaurant instead of the garbage that they eat. And that's why I said, I don't know whether they're sitting and hiding from their husbands or from their wives while they binge on some of these people. It sounds sad, but they will stick the whipped cream, what do you call that?
Miracle Whip?
Yeah, the Miracle Whip. They put that can in their mouth, and they just fill their mouth with Miracle Whip. Can you imagine that? That's what's going on in America right now. Instead of coming to my restaurant and eating a healthy meal, they spend the extra money on a tub of Miracle Whip and spoon it into their mouths, hiding from their kids and their spouses. I think it is a very, very tragic situation. And it's tragic because I'm missing out on the business. Yeah, you know, I'll admit it. I could use the business. And I think it's something very sad about a man coming home from work, grabbing a can of Miracle Whip, hiding in the basement, and filling his mouth with that. Just, you ever seen the can, Phil?
Yeah, of course I've seen it, and I know what you're saying. And I've actually done that myself, but I haven't hid doing it.
You're kidding. I mean, what do you...
Well, it's something you do with the kids. You know, they want to do it. And and you'll put the Miracle Whip on top of whatever you're eating, and then you put it in the kid's mouth.
What?
All right, hold on for just a minute, man. I don't want to have to explain this, okay? Somebody get on the line and explain it to him during the break here. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Ted Bell is on the line with us from Ted's of Beverly Hills, sponsoring this segment of the Phil Hendry Show. The restaurant, his restaurant's doing well. A lot of restaurants are doing well, some not so well. Very interesting fact in the middle of our recession here, Americans are putting on weight. We're packing on the pounds. Are we eating more? If we are eating more, are we eating healthy? And if we are eating healthy or eating more, why are we not eating at these restaurants? Why are we staying home? Ted's saying the food we're eating at home is obviously putting on weight, can't be that healthy. And by staying away from restaurants, staying away from businesses, maybe there isn't such a recession as there has been reported, if people are getting fatter in the middle of one. What do you think? 877-876-PHIL. Ted Bell thinks that there probably isn't a recession or as much of a recession on as there people are saying, and people ought to be eating at his restaurant. 877-876-PHIL. World famous Phil Henry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills here in Beverly Hills. In fact, I'm going to be standing out in front of the restaurant here, Phil, talking to people as they come by. Anybody who's listening to the Phil Henry Show right now, come on in. We'll get you Ted on me.
What are they getting?
A Ted, which is Captain Morgan's and Coke. That's a Ted. That's a drink, by the way, that I came up with in 1981, Phil, when my father was still alive. And people today will say, oh, rum and Coke, I know what that is. No, you don't know what that is. You think you know what that is. I'm the guy that started it.
You were the first guy to mix Captain Morgan's and Coke, but...
No, the first guy to do rum and Coke. That's what I'm trying to tell you, and that's what I try to tell people, and it's always the same thing. Oh, no, you didn't, because a friend of mine, no, your friend didn't do anything.
All right, well, let's get back to, and I appreciate that.
Hold on. You know, I want to make this very clear. I'm the guy that came up with that, so when you have a rum and Coke, it's called a Ted.
All right.
Well, you're blowing it off. That's what really...
No, I'm not blowing it off, Ted. I want to get to... you and I have talked about this many times. You know that I believe you. I want to get back to this conversation we're having about the economy. And you made it very, very clear during the break, and I thought it was very, very well done.
Well, all right, let me say this. When you stay at home and you eat, you have extra income enough to eat whereby you're getting fat. Well, that's income that would better be spent than in the economy at large. So, because getting fat is wasted food. So if you want to, and I'm not saying waste, if you want to spend your money on food and help the economy, come to my restaurant or come to one of the great restaurants that we have. I can't take it when I see some of these overweight people going down the street. In fact, I'm out on the street here. Hold on. All right. Now, Phil, I'm on Dayton here in Beverly Hills. And walking down the street right now is a... How you doing? I'm not going to say anything to him. He was looking at me, but he was a very heavy set guy. Here comes a guy now. Hey, you. What are you doing? Where'd you get all the fat? Yeah, you too. All right.
What are you doing?
I want to ask these people where they're getting so fat. Because what makes me angry is the selfishness of some... Boy, I hate to say it. What makes me angry is the selfishness of some of these pigs who will get fat in their homes on the spooning Miracle Whip. You know what Miracle Whip is, don't you?
Are you sure you don't mean Cool Whip?
No. I know people that eat whipped cream. No, I mean some of these people eat Miracle Whip.
Oh, my God. I'm going to throw up. I can't stand that stuff.
Who can? Who eats Miracle Whip? No one. No one. Except for these fat pigs. Here comes a guy right now. How you doing? Where did you get all the weight? Huh? How'd you put on all that weight? How did you put on all that weight? We're in the middle of a recession. Yeah, you too. See, the guy, he flipped me off. So,
well, they're going to flip you off, Ted, and I don't know what you're hoping to prove here, other than if you say that someone that is overweight is selfish because they pack the weight on at their house and not at your restaurant. Should they come into your restaurant and get fat?
They're not going to get fat in my restaurant because we serve steak and we serve vegetables and we serve delicious mashed potatoes and baked potatoes. Potato is not a fattening vegetable. Potato is starch. It is not fat. fattening. It depends on how you eat it. Sure, we fry potatoes, but you can make a wise food choice at our restaurant, and you're not going to put on weight. And we even our salad bar. It's not an all-you-can-eat salad bar. Like, I'll give you another example here. Look at these. Look at all these people. Did you talk to him? No, this kid here. Hold on, Phil. Did you talk to the kid here? He's back three times for the salad bar. Go talk to him. We got kids coming in. They think it's an all-you-can-eat. Now, here comes another guy. Hold on for a minute.
Ted.
Hold on. Hey, you. Hey, how you doing? Ted Bell. So, let me ask you a question. Why are you... Well, how much do you weigh? You weigh 320. Did you put that fat on at home? Or, yeah, that's what I mean. When you come in and eat restaurant in my restaurant, you can turn into a pig. Well, you look like a pig. You look like a pig. You flip me up. People are not...
When you tell a guy that he looks like a pig, what do you think he's going
to
say?
I want him to be honest with me.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Let's go to a phone call now on the Phil Hendry Show. We have, hanging on, Lauren in Kansas. Hi, Lauren. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Ted Bell.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Okay. I would have my friend to eat because I can't afford to eat at his restaurant.
Say that again, Lauren. Your phone was like kind of bailing out on us.
Okay. Lauren, tell me.
Wow.
At regular dinner.
Uh-huh. Did you understand that?
No, I can't understand you, Lauren. Your phone, this is what your phone did. It went like that.
All right, well, 877-876-PHIL. Let's move on to another phone call here. Matt. Matt, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
Hey, I want to say that I think, first of all, it's completely ludicrous, the assumption that when people are buying food and eating at home, that they're buying junk food. You know, I go out, I buy groceries to eat at home.
How are they getting fat? How are they getting fat? They're getting fat, don't you understand?
For $8, I could buy a pound of turkey and have four sandwiches. I'm not going out buying.
You understand? People are getting
crackers.
No, but you're not listening to me. You're not listening to me. You're getting fat.
All right. Basically, what Ted's saying is people are getting fat, and how are they getting fat?
They're getting fat on the garbage that they're eating at home.
All right, we'll be right back with more. Thanks very much for calling, Matt. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show as we talk with our friend Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills, sponsoring this segment of the show, talking about people gaining weight during a recession.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
Yeah. Come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. You gotta work that out, right?
Yeah.
Come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills tonight. And if you gotta eat, eat healthy at Ted's.
Here at Ted's.
All right, Ted.
Well, I mean, you know, I've been on your program here for 45 minutes. The last two full get it through some. Do you hijack it or?
Of course we do.
Well, why is it every time I'm listening to your show, you got a phone call on there? Over there.
Because we've had some technical problems we're working on, okay?
Yeah, that's so I understand. What I am trying to say to you, Phil, and I forgive me. There's Verizon, there's AT&T, there are normal phone companies. Why do you guys have to hijack the signal?
We're not hijacking anybody's signal, man. Okay.
Well, you can laugh if you want, but the last three calls I've heard on your show have been sound like I'm listening to a police scanner.
All right, we're talking with Ted Bell here about the fact that people are putting on weight during a recession. If people are eating to the point of obesity, Obviously, they have the extra money to spend on food. Why not eat at the restaurants and help them out and not eat at home, shoveling down Cool Whip and things like that? Here is Amanda in Abilene, Texas. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Amanda, go ahead. Amanda? See, there's that feedback, too.
Yeah, I know.
Amanda? All right, well, what
Hello?
Do you want me to tell you? Yes, ma'am, you're on the air.
I can't understand.
I'm on the... she cannot hear me. She can't hear me.
Well, I'll tell you, Bill, I got to hand it to you. I've been on some radio shows where they had bad phones. You guys got no phones.
Amanda cannot hear me. All right. What do you guys propose to do about that? Nothing? All right. What do you want me to do? Go to the second bank? All right. I'll try this. Yeah, she's hung up. I don't blame her. I don't blame her for hanging up. So, Ted, there we are. Right out of the gate, we lost our phone call. So,
Well, you're doing really... I don't think I've heard anybody struggle on a talk show the way you have. Now, you got phone service there.
Yes, we have phone service. Let's just forget about it, and let's just keep talking about this, okay?
Yeah, sure, we'll talk about it. Whatever you want to do there, Phil. You know, what I'd like to do, though, at some point, is get on, like, another radio show, maybe, where they, you know, have...
But give us a call, and we'll get you on the air.
You know, the last two calls you had, you couldn't hear. Then you go, well, let's get this chick on the air. You get her on the air, and now you can't hear her. At what point do you say to yourself, Canada, I think you're probably stealing some local station signal out of Fargo, North Dakota or something. I think you were the big-time company.
I am with a big-time company, okay?
All right, well, I understand they're great. But maybe what they ought to do is spend a little money on the phone equipment. I don't...
Let's get back to the idea here that Americans have packed on pounds.
Well, what do you want me to say? I've said it all. We've got a lot of people in this country, Phil, that are very, very selfish. We have a lot of people in this country besides, you know, just bad people, you know, people that can't, you know, get phones to work.
All right, let's stick to the food, okay?
All right. We've got a lot of very selfish people who are overweight in this country who have decided that, yes, there's a recession, but guess what? What I think I'm going to do is I'm going to eat at home, and I am going to save as much money as I can and eat at home and eat garbage. Now, why are they saying eat garbage? They're nervous. Or maybe they've got more money than we think they do. But whatever the situation is, they're taking that extra money that they've got for food and they're not putting it into the restaurants of America. They're not putting it into other businesses that deal in the delivery of a food service. They're going to the store and they're buying the kinds of foods that put on weight. So they can't tell me that they're eating healthy. If they were eating healthy, they wouldn't be gaining weight.
So what they're doing is they're going to the store and they're eating on the Miracle Whip, and you're saying, come to my restaurant.
I'm saying, come to Tents of Beverly Hills, but I'm doing something even more. I'm saying, why don't you people come to Tents of Beverly Hills and quit being selfish? Because I just walked outside the restaurant. I'll do it again if you want.
Well, how many fat people have you got walking by your restaurant right now?
When you say fat, I'm just talking about people that look like they've got excess body weight. Here's a guy here. No, a guy and a lady. Well, I don't want to bother them, but they look like a married couple. But both of them were enormous. Both of them were enormous.
Where?
Right out in front of my restaurant.
Ted, when you say enormous, are you saying obese?
I'm saying to me, and I play tennis three times a week, all right, and Marcy, my wife, she's a yoga instructor. So what do you think we look like? Pretty good. So to me, any guy that's carrying maybe another 10, 20 pounds is going to look like the biggest, fattest slob. Hold on, Bill.
Well, we got to get going here, man.
Hold on. Hey, how you doing? Ted Bell. So what do you weigh? Well, the reason why is I'm on the radio right now with Bill Henry. Yeah. Are you, what are you trying to pull in here? Are you eating all of that at home? Huh? No. Do you come to eat in my place? You eat in my place?
You're a lying sack of crap. You heard me. He said he got food poisoning on his shrimp cocktail. You're a liar. You know, I had to sue him.
Well, you didn't have to repeat it.
Why not?
Well, we didn't hear what he said.
Sure. He said he got food poisoning on the shrimp. You couldn't have gotten food poisoning. Well, if you had, you would have crapped half of it out. You lying sk- Here's another guy here. How you doing? Ted Bell. Sir, you look like you got a lot of weight on there. You look like a real... Jesus. Now, do you eat at home? Do you hide in the bathroom and shovel it in? Huh? Where are you going? Okay, he's got to get a cab.
All these people are blowing you off, man.
What?
All these people are blowing you off. They're telling you to get lost. That one guy said he got food poisoning from your shrimp cocktail. He doesn't even sound like he likes your restaurant.
No, they're all blowing me off because I'm asking them the obvious question. In the middle of a recession, how did you get fat? Well, I'll tell you how you get fat. Eating garbage. So how much of a recession could we possibly be in when people are hiding in their houses eating crap and not coming to my restaurant, Ted's of Beverly Hills in Beverly Hills, California, and having themselves a delicious shrimp cocktail. And this last guy, Phil, by the way, and play the jingle one more time, please, because can you play the jingle one more time?
We don't have it scheduled yet.
Well, I think I'd like it to be played one more time.
May I ask why?
Because the guy who said he got food poisoning from shrimp cocktail,
Play it again, bud.
Yeah, it's only scheduled.
Just have the guy play it again, because that guy said that he got food poisoning from my shrimp cocktail. When I hear that, it's like a cold drink to a thirsty man.
The Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
The guy that said he got shrimp cocktail food poisoning is a liar. And he said that he had diarrhea. Well, you should have seen the size of this guy. There's no way that anything goes out of him, only you. Well, if you take my meaning.
Boy, that's a hell of a... That's a really classy thing to say, not...
What?
If you take my meaning...
Well, he looked like the kind of guy that...
I heard you. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills, and the recession, which is has people actually putting on weight. If you're putting on weight during a recession, you must be eating more. Are you eating better? Probably not. And Ted says they ain't eating in his restaurant. It must be at home. We'll be back here with Ted Bell and the selfish fat people on the Phil Henry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Ted's of Beverly Hills, I want to say one thing. I am very grateful for the fact that my phone line works.
Okay, this smart ass, you know.
I'm very grateful. I heard you do a remote broadcast once, Phil. I just want to let everybody know this. I heard you do a remote broadcast once, and I want to commend you. And it was a remote broadcast you did as a very young man. It was from Jim Seal's Auto Farm. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Was that with this company that you're with now?
No, that was with a much smaller station.
No, because I was going to say the phone line was...
I understand that we may have some technical challenges tonight. You don't have to keep sticking it in and turning it and twisting it and breaking it off.
Oh, come on. Having some fun. But I'm telling you, folks, Phil, you know, he does... I've heard his show where the telephones work. And this Jim Seal's Auto Farm remote was wonderful, just wonderful. It was the kind of thing where you listen to a guy and there's another, you know, the guy comes on and says, hey, this is Jim Seal. I can't describe it.
That's just fantastic. All right, so anyway, we're talking about the restaurant business. The restaurant business has dropped off. I understand that because of the recession. There's more people, I guess, people are eating more, and it could very well be because they are nervous. It could be nervous eating, you know.
Well, it may be nervous eating, Phil. There may be a lot of reasons for the eating, but, excuse me, I just ate, okay?
That was really classy, by the way.
I'm sorry, I had one of our Cajun sausages. Boy, oh boy, I guess the guy's not allowed to enjoy himself.
No, not belch on the air, if you don't mind.
All right. But here's the thing I was going to say. People are eating more, and maybe it is nervous eating, but one thing that it does tell me is that there is extra income for the food, you know? And if there's extra income for the food, hold on for a minute. How you doing? Ted Bell. Can I ask you a question? Because you look, and I don't mean to be rude, but you look overweight. You look overweight, you know? Well, where do you eat? Do you eat at home, or what do you do? Oh, you do? All right, thank you very much. What's your name? Paul. All right, thanks, Paul. This guy said he eats in a closet. And
oh, he did not.
You want me to call him back? Hey, Paul, you want me to call him back?
No. Did he actually say that?
Yes. He eats in a closet. He hides it from his wife and his kids, he just said to me. How you doing? Do you eat in a closet? Yeah, he does. And why do you do that? You're embarrassed? What about? You eat the Miracle Whip. This guy eats Miracle Whip with a spoon.
Good God Almighty.
The host of the show, Phil Henry. You ever heard him? Yeah? Yeah. Yeah, he just said it. All right, thank you. He just said it.
Bull crap, I'm not buying that. Is he telling me that he's eating spoonfuls of Miracle Whip?
Yes. Yes. Yes! Spoonfuls of Miracle Whip. Now, let me ask you a question. Are you put off your food when you see those monkeys from...
All right, let's just... I don't want to go into any reviews of television commercials that you're doing here, man. I want to just finish up what we're talking about here. Less active at work, Americans have packed on the pounds. Now, many people read this, Ted, to mean that people are less active on their jobs. That's why they're putting on the weight.
It doesn't make any difference. You don't understand what I'm saying. Maybe it's because they are less active at work. Maybe it's because they're not eating right. But the fact is, it is not a recession if there's enough money for individuals to put on all of that weight while they're eating. Okay?
Well, it could be that people are cutting back in a lot of ways, but the one area that they will not cut back on is food.
Oh, boy. To me, that's disgusting, because if we're in a recession and we do need to cut back on our on what we're spending money on, and people will not cut back on food, and they wind up putting on all that weight, I think that is gluttony. I think that is one of the, one of the seven major sins. Is that what that is?
I don't know.
Well, I think it's gluttony, and I think it reminds me of that movie, whatever the hell, was it called Seven?
Yeah, Seven Major Sins.
Yeah, like the guy's so fat because he was just a fat slob, and they force-fed him. You want that to happen? You want to see that in our country? People with their skin splitting open because they're so...
Okay, Ted. Fact is this. People have extra money. They can spend the money any way they want. We've never been a very smart country when it comes to eating. We do tend to put on a lot of weight. We are an active country, but there's a very, very large populace, a large portion of the population that is not. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show here with Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills. We've been talking about this article that Americans are putting on weight. Let's talk about the restaurant business for just a moment. You say it's been off up to 20% a month. When was that, every month?
No, not every month. I mean, we were off, I'd say last month, we were down about 15%. You know, during the holiday it was great. A little bit after the holiday, Super Bowl season, all of that is great. Our bar does great year-round whenever there's a sporting event. The family nights, the people that are where we really get the crowds on a Saturday night or a Sunday night, yeah, they've done that a lot. And then I have to, of course, you know, we offer the specials for the elderly people, and that is going to bite into you unless you're getting the other traffic. We've been extremely stringent in some of the areas like the salad bar. It's never been an all-you-can-eat. And it's almost as if it's like a migraine headache, or it's like forgive me for putting it this way, Phil, because I do suffer from it, so I'm going to stick my neck out a little bit. Any of you out there that have herpes, and I'm not ashamed to admit it that I do.
And you okay?
That was very judgmental. What's that mean?
Because you're a married guy, and you've been married for about 25 years.
You know they had it before I got married. You know that, don't you?
Yeah. Okay. I'm.
God.
All right.
In any event, I suffer from herpes. And the problem we have with our salad bar is like every now and again a herpes inflammation. Because I'll turn around and what do I see? There's somebody back there for the third time. Now, it's not an all-you-can-eat. You buy one, you can go back and get another, I'm going to charge you again. Go get back and get another, I'm going to charge you again. Now, the waitresses, some of them are smart and some of them aren't. And my food servers will see someone go back and they'll forget it's not an all-you-can-eat. Oh, I guess it's all-you-can-eat. I had to get a guy here tonight, 14-year-old kid. I said to this kid, I got my eye on you because I know your trouble. And sure enough, he's on the floor looking for his napkin, trying to get a look up a skirt. You know.
Oh, come on.
I'm not kidding. And guess who was back at the salad bar for the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth time? This kid. How much did they charge him for? One.
Well, you know, that's just your food server.
Yeah, it's my food server, but it's also the kind of individual you get in here when the economy is down. You know, you're getting somebody sizzler. You know, excuse me for saying it.
Well, sizzler, to be honest with you, Ted, in an economy like this, sizzler is going to be a big, big, a major piece of competition for you, I can imagine.
No, sizzler doesn't scare me. Sizzler doesn't scare me. You know,
well, they're going to be competitive. I mean, are they not? Because people are going to still want to go out for a steak dinner, but they're going to obviously choose a place that's less expensive.
I don't care. They may, but Sizzler, you know, they don't knock me out. I'm not scared by Sizzler, and I sure as hell, and let me tell you something else, I'm not scared of Outback at all. Outback came on with that guy, the guys that are talking funny.
Australians.
Yeah. All of that. Oh, hey, come on over in the bamboo shoot. All this bull crap. You guys don't send me at all, man. Not at all. There ain't a one of them. Outback and that other guy, that Stuart Anderson. You got to be kidding me with that guy with the cowboy hat walking around.
All right, Ted. I mean, you know, you're doing well.
You better believe I'm doing well. It's going to take more than that guy walking through in the 2-inch heels and some Australian climbing a tree with a koala bear because that's just how he rolls. You know, for Ted Bell to get weird, I'll never get weird enough to climb a tree with a koala bear. No, no, no. No can do, friend. I ain't wearing 2-inch heels.
Ted's a Beverly Hills steakhouse. Come on down.
So come on down here to Ted's of Beverly Hills. If you want a steak and you're not going to see some guy in bush shorts with a koala mounted on him, come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills.
Here I
can do.
We want to put our meat in your mouth.
All right, Phil, thanks very much. See you later. Drop dead.
Boy, did you hear that?
Yeah.
Drop dead. I wasn't the guy standing out in front of your restaurant tonight, Ted, asking everybody why they're fat slobs. How about him, man? By the way, Outback Steakhouse is fantastic. I'm not kidding you. Have you been there?
Yeah, I wonder why.
You won't see a guy in bush shorts climbing a tree with a koala mounted. All right, we'll be back with our news and commentary hour here on the world. What a night tonight has been on the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
No, 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 no.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Going places other talk shows wouldn't dare go. Like, for instance...
Working without a phone system!
Shut up. Although, I guess I was leading right into that.
Well, yeah, you want to say that.
I didn't want him to say that, but yeah, we've definitely had some technical challenges here over the last few days, few weeks, few months, few years, but we're going to get to the bottom of it before I die. And hopefully I'm not dying within the next, say, well, let's see, 58. I'd like to live to be 100. I don't think that's unreasonable. 42 more years, we ought to be able to solve these problems. I may not be doing this particular show by then. But nonetheless, welcome to our radio program every night here and as well on Phil TV in HD at philhendryshow.com. Live streaming video of our show every night and also on demand. And you can pick up our show if you're watching our video stream right now. There's my iPhone. You can pick us up on Skyfire. I think there's another one called, what is it, Putter or Putnam or Putty or...
No, it's called Puffin.
Puffin. Puffin is another browser. You can get your Mac to be very, very conversant with, shall we say, your Apple iPhone or your iPad. And, you know, people are sending me pictures every day. I get a photograph from somebody that they took watching me on their iPad, you know. So don't give me this jazz about how, yes, there are. There's millions of them, man. Because the guys over at Apple finally figured out, you know, we're losing a lot of business and a lot of goodwill if we cannot somehow use, flash media. So we have to. I know that you guys don't like flash media at Apple, but, you know, there's a lot of people that have it. So would you mind not being such a bunch of stuffy guys as to not give us some way of accessing it? So we have these browsers, Skyfire being the primary one, so you can catch us on demand as well as stream it live at philhenryshow.com. So this is our news and information hour. Bud Dickman along with Robert Leonard. And I've been just looking at a few stories here that we're going to be talking about here tonight in this hour. Racism to blame for Obama's problems, key Democrat says. Racism to blame for Obama's problems, key Democrat says. Now, is this a simple-minded clown that doesn't recognize there are a number of factors that play into why on any given day Barack Obama may be having problems? Or does he say, is he saying all-encompassing, you know, the beginning and the end, the alpha, the omega, it's racism? I understand maybe better than a lot of people that I'm just not stupid. And I grew up in America, so no one's going to tell me that racism doesn't play into some of the attitude about Barack Obama. It is a fact, Jack. It's also true that Barack Obama's race played into the decision-making of a lot of Americans when it came to voting for him. That's a fact. Is it why he became president? I'm not willing to say that, no. Some people may, but anybody that says that, they don't like him. I don't particularly like some of his policies. I don't particularly like Democrats. But I haven't got a raging hatred of Barack Obama or a sense the guy's sending me down the Marxist crapper or, you know, he's going to lead us with the gold star on the red flag into a communist future. I'm not that dumb. You got to be dumb to think that. You have to be somebody that is not plugged into the American reality to think that. I'm sorry, and I'm not going to engage in any stereotypes, all right? I'm not going to sit here and call anybody a hillbilly or anything like that because I know that, there are people have varying abilities to grasp some of these things, people. But there's one thing that is true about American history, and there's one thing that's true about any given day in the life of America. No one guy created what we're living in. And that goes for you liberals, simple-minded bastards, with your whole George Bush caused the whole collapse of the American reality. Sooner or later, people are going to wake up to something, and here it is. You don't drive 55 or 60 miles an hour on every street in the nation. Sometimes you slow down. Sometimes you speed up. Sometimes you go a dead even 55. It depends upon the environment that you're operating that motor vehicle in. If you're in a hospital zone, you slow down, you keep it quiet. If you're on a freeway, you go fast. If you're in a 70-mile-per-hour zone, an 80-mile-per-hour zone, you really go fast. If you're in a school zone, you go slow. If you're on a city street, 35, 40 miles an hour, depending upon where you are. In each individual environment and in each individual thing that we encounter in our automobile, we go at varying speeds. The same is true of American history. America is like a road that we have been traveling on. In some places, there are potholes. In other places, the road is smooth and dry. And there's nothing but sunshine ahead. And in other places, it is stormy, and it's wet, and it's hazardous. Some places, there's a hairpin turn, and in other places, it is as straight as a shot. Some places, it is flat along the plains, and in other places, we're traveling along a mountainous incline. And some places, it might even be a dirt road, and in other places, it is a well-paved asphalt highway. But there is nothing really that we haven't been able to negotiate if we're going at the right speed. Now, what I'm telling you is truth. And if you can't take it, then I'm glad I'm me and not you. And I'm not saying this to anybody in particular. But if that means that sometimes being a liberal isn't the greatest idea in the world, that sometimes you got to slow down or speed up, you have to adjust how you do things, then that's just the way it is. And if sometimes that means being a conservative isn't the smartest move in the world, that's just how it is. And if people don't want to grasp that, it means that they don't really, I've said this many times, I'm going to say it again, you don't really care about the country. It's just about ideology. Do we love America or do we love being Republicans and Democrats? What do we love more? I'd really like to know.
Well, do you want me to answer?
No, I'm not asking you. All right, go ahead, bud.
I like being a Democrat more.
Than being an American? Than being an American.
Oh. I thought you meant being a Republican.
What do you mean, than being a Republican?
I thought you said, do I like being a Democrat more, or do I like being a Republican more?
Well, what the hell are you, man? Are you a Democrat or a Republican?
I don't know. Sometimes, you know.
Well, there you go. Sometimes you do change speeds. But you're saying to me you like being a Democrat more than... Are you trying to tell me that sometimes you're Republican and sometimes you're Democrat?
Yeah, well, sometimes I think that way, yeah. Well, who do you vote for? What? Who do you vote for? I vote generally for a Democrat.
You vote generally for the Democrat. What are you registered as?
Well, not a sex offender.
Not a sex offender.
Are you an idiot or something, man? He asked whether you're a Democrat or Republican. Oh! I'm an independent.
Independent as a sex offender.
Man, you make that mistake with the wrong guy. I didn't say that.
Yes, you did, you idiot. Hey, what are you registered as, man? A sex offender? I'm telling you, you know, bud, somebody asks you, what are you registered? You're going to vote a Democrat or Republican. But here's the thing. You got to be one or the other, I guess, you know. And in America, you know, it's a very dangerous thing. Very, in talk radio especially, it's very, very dangerous to say what I'm saying right now. It's extremely dangerous because, first of all, most people who program talk radio stations aren't bright enough to understand what I'm saying. About as stupid as the day is long. You say to them, well, are you a liberal or conservative? Well, you know what, man? Take that and shove it. What do you think of that? Hey, you think I'm kidding? I ain't kidding you, man. You want to talk straight to my audience? What do you want me to do? You want me to make up something? Because he got so wound up in his ideology, he got so pissed off at Laura Ingraham, because it ain't about the country. It's about whether or not you have, you know, whose side are you on. So he got so angry at her because she was bagging on Obama going over to Europe and doing whatever the hell he was doing. You know, he's over in Europe, man. So he's traveling. That she was bagging on him. And that's you know, what happens when you're a president and there are talk show hosts that don't like you. It's one of the easiest shots in the world to take, which is the following. Oh, you're not in the country and there's tornadoes? You must be some kind of a scumbag. Like I said, they did it to Bush, too, during the Iraq war. So, Ed,
what's he know?
What do you mean, what's he know?
Yeah, I mean, he got to call her a slut out of nowhere.
Maybe he's attracted to her. Why did that word come to mind? You know? What the hell is that about?
Doesn't mean he's attracted to her.
You know, it had nothing to do with what she said. And he knew it, or at least he, you know, copped to it. But he never really copped to why he chose that word. And I believe he chose that word because he's got the hots for her. All right. In other news, a California state board this week denied medical parole to a convicted rapist who's been a quadriplegic since he was attacked in prison 10 years ago, arguing that the inmate's verbal threats in prison to female staffers proves he would still pose a threat to public safety if he were released. Stephen Martinez, age 42, was the first California inmate to be considered for medical parole under a law that took effect this year and is aimed at saving taxpayers the expense of providing medical care and security to incapacitated inmates. Under the law, inmates who are permanently medically incapacitated with a medical condition that makes them unable to perform activities of basic daily living may be released if they do not pose a threat to public safety. In announcing the decision after 2 hours of deliberation, a two-person panel of the State Board of Parole hearing cited Martinez's lengthy disciplinary record, including threats to nurses and other prison staff who have cared for him at the Corcoran State Prison's acute care facility. Now, understand, this guy was incapacitated. He was made a quadriplegic as part of an attack that took place in prison 10 years ago. And one might argue cynically, here's a great idea. We can get rid of half of these guys. We'll just, especially up there at Corcoran, we'll just have ourselves another one of these sponsored gang fights, put some guy in a wheelchair for life, and kick his ass out the front door. Hey!
Yeah, but you know what, man? It's like you always said, guy in the bar, the one guy in the bar, gonna be the one guy in the...
Will you slow down, man? What are you trying to say?
Yeah, slow it down, man. The one guy in a bar is going to start a fight in a wheelchair.
Well, I've never really said that.
Yeah, you did, man.
I've said that, and this is only my experience, and I don't mean anything by this, so please understand. I have said at times that when you walk into a bar and there's a dude in a wheelchair, a lot of times that'll be the guy that starts the fight.
Yeah, man, I think it's true.
Well, I mean, you know... Not a lot of times.
Yeah, it depends on a bar, though.
Of course it depends on the bar. I'm not talking about a nice... Well, I shouldn't say it. I don't go into bad places, but... well, I'll give you an example. I went into a bar. I used to go to this bar that was a cop bar. It's in my hometown of Arcadia. And there is a bar in Arcadia that is a... it's where the cops hang out. It's where the Arcadia PD hangs out. It's where probably Temple City Sheriff hangs out. Monrovia cops may go in there, and it's a cop bar, and they have all of the cop insignia on the wall, and they have a pool table, but it doesn't mean that every so often things don't get out of hand. I mean, generally things won't get out of hand in a cop bar, if you know what I mean. Well, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, are you going to start a fight with a cop?
But one night I was in there, and there was this dude in a wheelchair, and man, he was getting on everybody's nerves, and he was doing it on purpose, and he was looking to start something. And sure enough, something happened, and some guy jumped him, and then his buddy, you know, and a guy in a wheelchair always has a buddy, and that's the guy who's going to do most of the ass-kicking. His buddy jumps in and starts beating on the guy that jumped his pal in the wheelchair. Meanwhile, the guy in the wheelchair is wielding this pool cue, man, like an expert. You know.
Did he wind up getting his ass kicked?
No, the dude in the wheelchair didn't get his ass kicked, no. In fact, nobody really got their ass kicked. It was eventually... settled, probably. I think what happened, a couple of guys interceded who were just in from off duty. And how do I know, man? Maybe the guy in the wheelchair was at one time a cop. You know, they could have all been cops for all I know. But I've seen that happen more than once, you know. So a cat in a wheelchair. The point that I'm trying to make here is if the state of California says, let's let this guy out of prison. He's a quadriplegic. He's in a wheelchair. That may be well and good. However, you've just heard in this story a number of people, personnel, medical personnel there at the prison saying the guy's a danger. And I'm telling you, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but cats in wheelchairs can mix it up like anybody else if they get somebody to help them anyway.
Yeah, they got a big friend.
All right, so that's that story. I'm glad we could get that in for whatever reason. All right, coming up, parents, keep a kid's gender, or he or she wants to be something that they're not. Also, a story about the Oakland Elementary School System and another kid gender story. This is some pretty weird stuff here about kids and gender. I hope that kids are happy with their gender these days.
We'll have to check into that.
Make sure your kid likes being what he, she, or it is. Otherwise, that's another expense. We'll be back with more here. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, philhenryshow.com.
Radio. Yeah. For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
What? Okay. Got it. I got it. Thank you.
Radio for Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. I'm intrigued. Just as we were leaving the air to go into that first break, I was giving you a I was teasing what's coming up, and I'm teasing these stories about gender. Oakland Elementary School teaches children about gender. That was one of them. And another one here. Parents keep child's gender under wraps to child so child could choose he or she wa- What is this? Parents keep child's gender under wraps to child can choose who he or she wants to be. When many couples have a baby, they send out an email to family and friends that fills them in on the key details like name, gender, birth weight. But the email sent recently by Kathy Witterick and David Stocker of Toronto, Canada, to announce the birth of their baby, Storm, was missing one important piece of information. They're not saying whether Storm is a boy or a girl. We've decided not to share Storm's sex for now, a tribute to freedom and choice in a place of limitation. A stand-up to what the world could become in Storm's lifetime.
A more progressive place, question mark?
God almighty, Canadians. There's nothing ambiguous about the baby's genitals, but as Stalker puts it, if you really want to get to know someone, you don't ask what's between their legs. I do.
I do, too.
What's between your legs? Don't tell me, man. I'm saying, you know, just as a,
rhetorical question.
Yes, rhetorical question. What's between your legs? Well, who's telling me this? Mrs. Stocker, or is it, should I call you Mrs. Witterick and Mr. Stocker? Well, guess what? Yes, I do. Anyway, there's nothing ambiguous about the baby's genitals, but as Stocker puts it, that's the father of the child, if you really want to get to know someone, you don't ask what's between their legs. Spoken like a real Canadian. I'm just kidding around. I shouldn't be putting down our north of the border friends, but, oh, man. Anyway, I'm going to Canada next month.
Yeah, you got your relatives up there, man. You better watch what you're saying.
You know, I actually do have this sort of, there's a scary part of me. There's a lot of scary parts of me, but there's a scary, there's something that freaks me out that I'm going to get to Canada and I'm going to be talking to my cousins. And yeah, we heard some of the stuff you've been saying. And I'll be a long way from home, man. Long way from home, brother. Anyway, they say that kids receive messages from society that encourages them to fit into existing boxes, including with regard to gender. We thought that if we delayed sharing that information in this case, hopefully we might knock off a couple million of those messages by the time that Storm decides Storm would like to share. What are you talking about, man? Let me tell you the message that that kid's going to get. Both of that kid, of he, she, its parents are really gone, man. Really weird and gone. In fact, if not telling the gender of my precious baby, I am saying to the world, please, can you just let Storm discover for him, herself, it, what it, he, she wants to be, she wrote in an email? God, do you know the response I would send to this woman?
Well, I mean, all she's trying to say is,
Yeah, tell me, what is it she's trying to say, man? So in other words, you don't know what Storm is. All right, fine, Storm. Now, are you likely to name a little girl Storm, or are you likely to name a little boy Storm? Well, this lady, Mrs. Witterick, or Mr. and Mrs. Stocker, or Mr. Witterick and Mrs. Stocker, I don't know how they want to be seen. Maybe she had the baby, but she's actually the he. And
what are you talking about?
What I mean is, maybe if they're not so much into being prejudged, I don't know whether Mrs. Witterick, or I should say Mr. Witterick, maybe Mr. Witterick is a she, and maybe Mrs. Stocker is a he. Or maybe Mr. Stocker's a she, and Mrs. Witterick is a she, but some days is a he.
What are you talking about, man? It's not that tough.
Yes, it is that tough. This, it is that tough, man. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more on whether it, what your kid's gender is. There's also another attorney story here about using a large-breasted assistant, a buxom assistant, to distract a jury. That's heavy. Wait till we get into that story. But we'll finish up here whether the Stockers or the Witterics or the Stocker Witterics, what it, and I, when I say it, I actually mean two of them, what it wants to call their baby, which could be human, or it could be an animal. I don't want to prejudge, and I don't want the animal he, she, it baby to be hung up on, you know, whether it's a thing or is it a thing.
For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Been kind of a fun night, even though we've had we had the Dixie Cup and a string out there during a couple of our hours. But we have one of the greats. We got Fred Scotty on the job. That cat is all over it, man.
Yeah, he's all over it like stink on you-know-what.
No, that's really flattering.
God, man, use a better example.
Well, Fred's all over it. Anyway, he'll get the thing straightened out. But right now, before we move on to the story that everybody wants to hear about, which is the lawyer that hired the girl with the really large, you know, things to distract the jury, we just want to finish up with this ridiculous story from north of the border. In Toronto, this is a couple. You know, my family's from Toronto, and we went there when I was 5 years old to visit my grandparents. There was nothing about the city that ever gave me any hint, even though I was 5 years old, so how would I know, that there would be these kinds of weird asses. Anyway, so it's a couple are having a baby, and they're sending out the announcement, we're having a baby. Is it a boy or is it a girl? Well, we're not saying. Why not? We don't want that kind of head trip put on our kid. We're not telling you whether the kid is a boy or a girl. We'll tell you the kid's name. What is it? Storm. Pat. Is he or isn't she?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Somebody ought to call Julia Sweeney up and find out what she thinks about this before you want to lay this on some kid for real. Pat, is she or isn't he? So only the parents, their two other children, both boys, a close friend, and the two midwives, naturally, who helped deliver a now four-month-old baby know its gender. Even the grandparents have been left in the dark. Why? Because they're just a couple of old fools that will probably spill it online or otherwise yammer about it in some lawn bowling tournament, and Stalker and Witterick will not have it, I say. They will not have it. Stalker and Witterick, which is how they're known, by the way. They're man and woman, and they have children. Maybe they're married, maybe they're not. They don't want that kind of head trip put on them, though. Are you married? Well, how dare you?
Yeah, they tell you. Tell people. I'm not going to tell you. Because you're being racist.
You know what, Bud? For the first time, I'm going to agree with something you said. Yeah, they probably will call it racist. Are you married? Or how dare you, you racist? Did you just ask me? Well, yes, sir. I just... Did you invade my personal life choice space by asking me if I'm married or not? Well, sir, I... How dare you? All right, so anyway... Stalker and Witterick, which could be a morning show, it could be a comedy team, but in this case, it's a man and a woman. Guess which one's the man or which one's the woman, huh? Yeah, and they don't want you to either. They're just Stalker and Witterick. Although I will tell you that Stalker's the man and Witterick's the woman, and his name went first, so there must be some serious... Somebody is going to get gutted like a... They're going to have a gaff hook thrown into them by nightfall. Excuse me, why's your name first? Well, I'm sorry, honey, I didn't mean to... Ah! Anyway, Stalker and Witterick say the decision gives Storm the freedom to choose who he, she wants to be. What are you talking about? What we noticed is that parents make so many choices for their children, it's obnoxious, said Stalker in his barely masculine manner. And guess what he does? He's a teacher at an alternative school. So basically, at this school that you go to where Stalker teaches... are these little eunuchs. They just, these little androgynous things that walk around like, you know, a casting call for Pat, and they're all probably doing that ridiculous thing.
That movie, me, I love that movie.
You know, you and I are the only two, Robert, that like It's Pat.
You like that movie?
I thought it was a riot. I love the hell out of it. You nuts? Funnier than hell. But, I mean, this is where this guy teaches, and you go, and there's these little androgynous creatures. Hi, welcome to our alternative school. Yeah, can I just get my kid and get out of here? Which one is it? Ooh. When I brought her, how dare you say her? Don't you ever use that word around here. Do you know the damage? Do you know the bruising? Yes, the kids are bruised. Well, where are they bruised? Well, their whole, the physiognomy, the psychophysiognomy is bruised. There is physical bruising, there is emotional, there's spiritual, there is neural bruising. There's bruising in the atmosphere around the child. There's bruising as you take the child home in your car. The bruising continues. Yeah, okay, man. All I needed was change for your Coke machine, but I guess you don't have one of those. Yes, we do. In the teacher's lounge. All right. In fact, in not telling the gender of my precious baby, I am saying to the world, please can you just let Storm discover for... All right, I'm calling bull crap on this, man. Did you make this up, Jason? I think he did.
What?
I think Jason made this whole story up. This is bull crap. There's no way. There's no way, man. You must have made this up, dude. This has got to be a joke. My precious baby. Stalker came across a book from 1978 titled X, A Fabulous Child's Story by Lewis Gould. Little did he know that it was a joke book written by National Lampoon. He took it to be serious, and now an entire civilization based upon X, A Fabulous Child's Story by Lewis Gould, exists in the outback of Arkansas. X is raised as neither a boy or a girl and grows up to be a happy and well-adjusted it. It became so compelling, was almost like, how could we not, Witterick said. The couple then decided to experiment on a poor, helpless child that they decided to conceive one night. The two of them allowed to conceive. There were no police. There were no politicians. There was no law that was passed forbidding these two, after reading a book called X, A Fabulous Child's Story by Lewis Gould, nothing that would stop them from creating a child and putting this child through this horrific mill, this psychophysical social mill. And so one night, Witterick and Stalker got together in whatever way they get together to have relations, hair in her armpits, he fully shaved. The two of them exchanging roles and trading off. Oh, God. Eventually, the child was conceived. When they found out that the female was carrying the baby, Stalker went into deep depression. Well, you know that women carry the baby. He said, no, I didn't know that. He was so depressed that she offered to abort the child so that they could do it again and see if it would grow in him. But when convinced, no, they can't do that, he got out of his depression. The child was developed to term, thank God. Maybe it had a fighting chance, but no, we forget. Stalker and Witterick are its parents. The child popped out. They took one look at the genitals, were shocked at what they saw, decided to cover up the child's sex for the whole world, except for their children, their best friends, but not the grandparents. They don't get to know anything, those two babbling elderly fools. Both boys are unschooled. These are the two children that have been identified as boys. That much we do know. They have other children. They have been identified as boys. We do know that they are, quote, unschooled, which is basically homeschooling, but they don't want to call it being schooled because Witterick and Stalker, that's the last thing they want is schooling for their kids. It's a version of homeschooling which promotes putting a child's curiosity at the center of his or her education. So whatever the child is curious about, that's what they'll learn about. Whatever they're not curious about, they won't learn anything about that. That's basically how I was educated.
Yeah, me too.
I only learned stuff that I was interested in. What? Why is this so groundbreaking? I wasn't interested in chemistry, and guess what, folks? Today, I don't know jack squat about chemistry. That's what we call progressive. As Witterick puts it, boy, I like how they quote the two of them, too. As Stalker says, as Witterick says, every time I hear from these two idiots, it sounds even more bizarre than the time before. Stalker already told us about his precious baby. As Witterick puts it, it's not something that happens by rote from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., weekdays in a building with a group of same-age people, planned, implemented, and assessed by someone else. Really, how does it happen? And don't tell me you know, because we know it didn't happen with you. Because Jazz and Keo, now those are the two boys, wear pink and have long hair, they're frequently assumed to be girls. But according to Stalker, because the two of them, Stalker and Witterick, are so ghoulish with their social experimentations, they're trying to take these two healthy boys and they're trying to beat down their self-esteem as quickly as they can by putting these two boys in pink clothes and long pink hair. If, and hopefully it can happen, if the two of them can get the crap kicked out of them by the time they're 10, oh man,
boy,
then they'll know that they've been successful at beating out of these two children any sense at all of their masculinity. Just had it beat out of them. Oh man, are they kidding?
Well, I don't know, man, maybe something's good.
What's the point, man? Let me take two boys. Okay, great. Now, put them in pink. Give them long hair. Well, what are you saying, Phil? Are you homophobic? homophobic. This has got nothing to do with sexual orientation. This has got just to do with gender identification. So Stocker and Witterick, two ghouls, basically. I mean, they are the Mr. and Mrs. Frankenstein of gender identification in the 21st century. And what they've done ghoulishly is to put their sons into pink, long hair. People think they're girls, and that just makes Stocker and Witterick ever so joyous. Oh, goody. They don't correct. He said he and Witterick don't correct people. They leave it to the kids to do it if they want to. Hey, how are they allowed to do that, Mr. or Mrs. Stocker or Mr. Witterick or whatever the hell you are? Are they allowed to say, no, you dumbass, I'm a boy? Can they say that? Or are they not allowed to be pissed off? Because I'm sure in your world, well, it's a normal, of course it would be a normal mistake. But if it's a normal mistake, then maybe you aren't doing it right. Because people should already know that they're boys, even though they're wearing pink, have long hair, and have been given shots so they grow breasts.
No, they haven't given shots.
No, but what's, you know, they might as well just go the whole hog on this thing. But Stocker and Witterick, not Mr. and Mrs., they don't call these people by their first name. They're Stocker and Witterick, man. This whole article, Stocker and Witterick. I mean, this sounds like Stiller and Mara. Stiller and Mara had Ben, but they didn't let him know that he was a boy. They dressed Ben in pink. They have long hair on him, gave him pink shoes, and he grew up to become a comedian. But Stocker and Witterick's choices haven't always made life easy for their kid. Well, you could have blown me over, man, with a desk fan. Haven't always made life easy.
Man, everything they're doing make their life tough.
No, you're wrong. The choices that Stocker and Witterick make makes their kids' life easy. But not all the choices have made life easy. Like, for instance, putting a kid in pink with pink hair and pink teeth and a pink face, that makes life easy. But not all the choices have made life easy. Though Jazz likes dressing as a girl, he doesn't seem to want to be mistaken for one. He recently asked his mother to let the leader of a nature center know that he's a boy. And he chose not to attend a conventional school because of the questions about his gender. Asked whether that upsets him, Jazz nodded. What the hell are you people doing, man? The kid, he knows he's a boy. He likes dressing in pink, but he wants to be known as a boy. But he doesn't like to go to the conventional school because people ask him questions about his gender. And I guess that makes them wrong, huh? Not everything's made life easy for him. As for his mother, Stocker or Witterick, we've lost track. She's not giving up the crusade against the tyranny of assigned gender roles, she said as she stood up urinating. Everyone keeps asking us, when will this end, she said. And we always turn the question back. Yeah? When will this end? Yeah? Huh? When will we live in a world where people can make choices to be whoever they are? Huh? We always turn the question back. People cannot make choices to be who they are, ma'am. They are born with penises. They are born with vaginas. They are born with these assignations by nature.
What do you mean, ass?
Assignation. Assignment.
Man, sound like said ass.
Yeah, it did. Well, I didn't say that, did I? Assignation. Nature will be assigning us these roles until such time, I suppose, as the genetic scientists find a way for us to actually choose gender for the child before the actual two-term development of the child takes place. And that's just where that's at. Now, I would put it to you this way. I think nature's done a pretty good job. We have around a 50-50 split on the planet. Yes, I know. It's about 51-49 women to men. This is what nature has done. Nature has given us this balance. And I think it's a pretty good balance. And how are we going to improve on that? What are we going to do to make that better? What if we blow it, man? What if we make too many... I mean, can you imagine living in a world with too many guys?
Man, that wouldn't be even worth living.
I'd have to go gay.
What do you mean, have to go gay? If you're not born gay, you ain't gay.
Yeah, but I'd have to make a lifestyle choice.
That ain't no lifestyle choice. It'd be weird, man, I'll tell you that. All right, we'll be back here in a world-famous Phil Henry show. That's about the most bizarre, irritating story, all rolled into one that I've read in years. A lawyer using a big-breasted assistant to distract a jury? That's the claim being made. Check us out, by the way, on the web at philhenryshow.com, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Be right back.
Radio for Patriots,
by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Radio for Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Margaret Gray checking in from Santa Monica. I don't know if you have information on this.
Well, you know, Phil, I'm listening to you and to the rest of you people laughing about this. I really think you need to understand what gender assignation is. You did use a very good word there. Assignation. If we are able to choose our gender, we are able to choose the paths in life that we walk. That's all it means. And Phil, I listen to your programs because I think you're funny. I also think you're a man of intelligence, so I'm very disappointed.
Well, wait, I'm going to ask you a question, okay?
I don't want to answer some asinine question.
No, it's not going to be asinine. If I decide that in life I want to be a woman...
Which is absolutely your right. It is your right because, as you know, presenting as a woman... is something you choose.
No, hold on for a minute. I want to present as a woman, right?
That is correct, yes.
All right. Now, I'm going to go in, and I'm going to use the ladies' can.
The ladies' restroom, yes. You can say the ladies' can, but it's... If you're presenting as a woman...
Oh, really? Why can't I say can?
I suppose you can say can, but I think if you really wanted to present as a woman, you wouldn't be talking like that.
All right, but I'm going to say that. I'm going to say I want to use ladies' can. Now, I walk in there.
You know, Phil, what you're going to do is you're just going to try to start a fight about this.
No, I'm not going to start. I want to ask you a question. I go into the ladies' restroom. They know I'm a dude biologically.
Well, they're not going to go, they know you're a dude. They will accept that you are female.
All right, that's fine. Now, I go in, I present as a female, I go, I want to use the ladies' restroom. Well, yes, you're entitled to. Now, I'd like to have some urinals installed.
Well, that is your right. That is your right.
And it is my right to have urinals installed in the ladies' restroom.
Absolutely. You are in the ladies' restroom. As a woman, you are entitled to a convenient, to a hygienic, and to a functional restroom, as a woman or as a man.
And no, but I'm a woman.
You are presenting as a woman, yes.
And I have a right to demand urinals?
Yes, you do. Technically, you do. Now, I know why you would do it. You would do it to cause a problem. But
I would. But I would also be doing it, to make a point.
No, you just said it the first time. You would do it to cause a problem. There, that's all I needed to hear. Thank you.
Oh, that's such bull crap.
You want to call her back?
That's such... She bailed out, man, because she didn't want to answer my question.
What?
I told you.
Well, she said yeah.
Yeah, she said yeah, but she didn't want to talk about it. She said yeah, she didn't want to talk about it, though. That's why she hung up.
I can get her back, find out about.
Try and call her back, bud.
All right,
877-876-PHIL.
Margaret? Yeah. Yeah, how you doing?
Bud, do you mind keeping it down, man, because I'm on the air right now?
All right,
now a lawyer...
Yeah, he wants to get you on the air right now.
Will you keep it down, please?
She said no.
Why'd she say no?
Because she said she already answered your question, and she knows you're going to try to trap her making a stupid comment.
Well, I'm going to tell you what I said, and I'm going to say it, again. I can present as a woman, according to her and all the other nuts that believe this. This has got nothing to do, ladies and gentlemen, with sexual orientation. Absolutely. This is not gay, straight. This is not anything having to do with any of that. Now we're getting out into the world of weird. Now what we're doing is we are deciding, because we're so progressive, and that, yes, there should be equal rights for gay people. Yes, there should be equal rights for LGBT and all those, fights that have been fought. Well, now what we're talking about here are straight people who've decided, well, you know, I think I'd like to wear pink, and I think I'd like to pee standing up, even though I'm a chick. Well, it ain't going to happen. You hear me? I said it ain't going to happen. But if I were to present as a woman, I would want urinals installed. John Elk, of course, is our technical director. Dan Northcraft, our associate producer, and we're produced by Jason Rance. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, also online on the web at philhendryshow.com. Pick up a backstage pass and enjoy this show the way it should be enjoyed, in full color, in HD. Yeah, this is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. See you tonight.
Phil Hendry.
Never did get to this story about the big breast...